Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
Show number 731. Hi, it's Monday. Oh, you probably figured that out. I started the morning off with a nail in my tire. Good times.
Oh, no.
I thought you were going to say a nail in your head.
No, but I mean, that could happen.
Did you get a full flat, or is it just a slow leak?
It's a slow leak, so I actually pulled over and I stole someone else's car and left mine. I'll pick it up later.
Don't think that's a good idea.
Dave can fix it. He's got one of those compressor things in his car.
I do, too.
He helped me.
Yeah, I carry one.
Oh, good.
Okay, yeah. So you don't need me then.
So what'd you really do? Fill it up?
No, I switch cars.
Express.
Hillary Clinton has pneumonia. We'll get to that. And sadly, Paul Green has died. Professor Paul Green passed away on Saturday. We'll have a lot more to say about that later. And Spike Odell will join us. And Rick Pearson as well. Hamp later on the Bears. It did what they expected they would do yesterday. Well, they were a little better than I thought, but they still lost. You don't get a participation ribbon. Adam Hogue in a few minutes. All that coming up. Paul Conrad, should we play a little music for Paul? Paul, do you ever think we should just do this and not do the segment? Because the song's really good.
It is such a good song. I feel like I'm ruining it.
All right, so here's the only thing I'm concerned about for you.
All right, yep.
Tomorrow night, you're going to do a primetime special.
No.
What?
Wednesday night.
Wednesday night, you're going to do a primetime special.
Yeah, that's right.
And on Wednesday night from 7 to 9, the WGN Morning News team will be on at night.
That's right.
How much do you hate the CW right now?
Well, that's the problem. At least they're not in our house anymore. They're out.
That's true. You get rid of them. So with the CW network and Channel 9 no longer being partners, there's a lot of prime time to fill. So if you have an idea for a television show, you don't even need to pitch it. Just go by Channel 9.
Come on in.
And come to the front desk and you go, I'm here to do prime time. And come on in.
Right. But be ready to be rejected, because I was in the GM's office and I do this unbelievable mime sock puppet. A performance of King Lear, right?
Oh, that's
with
good.
With my friend Schwitzy the sock.
And yeah.
I get a whole bunch of socks together. He shot it down.
This is the new guy, Paul?
Yeah. And I was like, this one's going to fly.
This guy sounds tough.
Because everyone loves mimes.
Everyone loves mimes. Everyone loves
and
socks.
Sock puppets. They love Shakespeare.
Yeah.
They love a good tragedy.
Those are winners.
And a sock. You got every. That's like, those are all the ingredients for great programming.
Repitch it with one tweak. I'll come in and do shadow puppets instead of sock puppets.
Okay.
Now, all I can do is a bunny.
That's all right. Good bunny. I can do a reindeer.
A reindeer and a bunny. And it could be a love story.
Yeah. All right.
Imagine what our hands can do.
We need to add something sexy in there, so I don't know how to do it, but.
Let's just have Robin come in and sing.
All right.
Oh, no, now we're rejected again.
Yeah, we got to come up with something.
So what are you going to do in this primetime special?
Listen, you would not believe how good this is going to be.
You're right. So what are you going to do in this primetime special?
We've got a whole bunch of great things. I'm excited about a couple of things. We've had a couple cancellations, you know, like we had U2 locked in, and then that fell apart. I had Merle Haggard. He passed away.
That's definitely going to hurt the chance to book him.
I've been on the phone all weekend with the Loch Ness Monster's agent.
Is that right?
There's like an 80% chance the Loch Ness Monster is going to be coming on.
That is huge.
We do have, and this is not, I'm not kidding around, we legitimately have Samantha and the amazing Acrocats and the Rock Cats, which is a band made up of cats. And we've had them on before, and it's unbelievable.
You know, Wednesday night, there's a lot of really good, expensive television being produced on the other networks. But you have the Rock Cats.
We got the Rock Cats. I think we've got a lot of great stuff. Like, it's going to be unbelievable.
And Larry will do the full 2 hours shirtless.
Yeah. Larry is doing the last hour, 40 minutes shirtless.
I see.
I do say, you know this guy Tom Skilling?
Yeah, I've heard of him.
He has agreed to come on.
We should.
And he's not going to do the weather. I'm going to ask him some questions, like some personal questions.
See, I would tune in for just 2 hours of that.
Right.
A two-hour behind-the-scenes look at Skilling.
Right, where we're not talking weather. We're talking stuff that might be interesting, because I think he's an interesting dude.
You do know you're the weather guy, right?
Yeah, I do know that.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Jared Payton's about to wrap up the weather and pitch it to you.
All right, is going to be. I know I didn't pitch it the way.
No, you pitched it great.
Really coming.
No, you pitched it great.
Boom.
Wednesday night, 7 o'clock.
7 to 9. Don't miss it.
All right, and I have not been called about being a guest.
All right. I wasn't either, to be honest with you, but I'm going to work your idea of getting the shadow puppet going. And
yeah, just remember, ask me to do everything. I rarely show up for anything. All right, I'll talk to you later.
All right, I love you.
Love you back. Yep. That's my friend Paul Conrad. And they're not kidding. Wednesday night, prime time, 7 to 9.
I would actually tune in to see the Rockettes.
See, I wouldn't. That's the thing that's going to keep me from watching.
Well, you're not a cat fan.
No, I'm not. I will watch the show because they're friends of ours and it's Channel 9.
Sure.
But I won't watch the Rockettes.
You don't want to see dancing cats.
Nope.
Come on.
No interest.
Okay.
Nope.
Will you stick around afterwards for my sports cast?
Are you doing sports?
Yes.
During that show?
I don't think it's during that show. It's
but you're on
9
Wednesday
o'clock
night?
And 10 o'clock.
I always watch you on TV.
Oh,
and
good.
I watch Andre as well. I saw Andre do a 9/11 piece last night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so listen, we got a lot to do, and we'll talk about Hillary Clinton's pneumonia, among other things. But first, the Bears. When we come back, the Bears lose yesterday in a wacky opening weekend in the National Football League.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Hey, Adam Hall.
Hi. Can you give us any insight into the plan for Thursday?
Not really.
What can you tell us about Bear Jones, and is he ready if he needs to be?
Ready for what?
Adam Hoge's Bears coverage is sponsored by C.J. Wilson Mazda.
6:24, Adam Hoge is here. Rough weekend, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you got the Northwestern situation, and then you got you got the Bears game. Are you all right?
I'm good. I'm hanging in there. It's
you had to watch the Cubs last night.
Oh, and the Cubs, too.
Yeah.
He was there.
Yeah, we went to the Cubs game last night. The Cubs played well, so you got that. I was really just there, though. The Cubs fans can always look forward. That's what they do. Mm-hmm. There's always next year.
Mm-hmm.
For us White Sox fans, we always have to look in the past. So I was really just there to relive 2005, where the White Sox won the World Series.
Did you try to get a chant going, wait till 2005? Wait till 2005.
Yeah. I was the only one, but yeah, I did it.
It's a strong chant. All right, so here's what I saw yesterday. I saw a Bears team that was surprising, I think, in the first half, that was competitive. It looked like they were in it, maybe in it to win it. And by the time the fourth quarter rolled around, I saw guys that really were tired. They were tired, and it was probably maxed out, and then it was over, and Houston was clearly the better team. What did I miss?
No, I think that's a very accurate way of putting it. I think competitive is the right word, and I think that's really going to be a theme for this team throughout the year. I think they're not going to be an easy out for any team that they play, and there's going to be weeks where they have more favorable matchups and are probably going to be able to pull out some of those wins. I mean, basically, they lost the fourth quarter, right? And you lose fourth quarter, you're not going to be a team that wins a lot of football games. So they got a lot of issues that they need to work out, but the fact that they came out the way they did, they showed some explosion on offense at times, but when they couldn't protect Jay Cutler, which was not all that much of a surprise when you consider what went on the offensive line last week, the offense didn't work. So protect Jay, keep him upright, make sure he doesn't get killed, and this could be, you know, a decent middle-of-the-road team, which is kind of what we've been predicting.
I was listening to a little bit of Hamp and OB and Kaz after the game with their little friend Mark Carmen, you could hear their heads exploding. But one of the things they really locked into was Kevin White quitting on a pass route. Look, I know he didn't play last year, but he's a grown-up. This is his second year. He had training camp. What part of quitting on a route is most concerning, the fact that he didn't know the route or the fact that he quit? Because that bothers me more.
Yeah, so the part where I would say he quit wasn't necessarily on the route. I think he ran the wrong route, so that's concerning, right? That's still an issue. He doesn't necessarily know his assignments on every play. We've seen that a little bit throughout the preseason, saw it in training camp. The guy is technically still a rookie, but he was in the building all last year, and that's the kind of stuff where I feel like he should have that ironed out a little bit more, but still, to go on the field, it's different and actually do it. Now, the part where I thought he did quit was once the pass was thrown and he realized it wasn't going his way, he didn't necessarily go after the guy on the other team that was catching it and getting the interception. He could have gone and made the tackle. So that was a little bit of a loaf right there. That's what Lovie Smith used to call those loafs. And I think that that is just inexcusable on his part. So I thought Kevin White's game yesterday was very concerning. You want to see what a first-round pick is supposed to look like in their debut? Will Fuller on the Houston Texans had a phenomenal game. Now, I don't know if you're supposed to be that good in your first pro game, but Kevin White was the complete opposite.
There's a, you know, Dave Ennett, there's a thing that you and I grew up with where coaches would scream at you, play to the whistle, play to the whistle. Doesn't matter if the ball's on the other side of the field, play to the whistle. And there was always accountability for it. Is there accountability, Adam Hogue, on this team when somebody doesn't play to the whistle or just, you know, execute the basic fundamentals of being on a team, with a team, and part of the team?
Yeah, I think there is. I think that's a difference right now with John Fox compared to the last regime and Mark Trestman. I think there is accountability on the Bears right now. I think there's maybe some other issues you can point to with John Fox, and maybe we'll get to those in a minute in terms of some of his in-game decisions that I think have been shaky at times throughout his first one-plus seasons here in Chicago. But in terms of what goes on in that locker room and holding guys accountable, I think that this is a really good coaching staff. They do hold those guys accountable. I think teammates hold each other accountable, which we didn't always see with the last regime. So what happened with Kevin White yesterday, I'm sure will get ironed out, and I don't think you'll see that again from the rookie.
Alshon Jeffery has a 100-yard receiving game by halftime. He's targeted twice in the second half, I believe, and I know at least one of those was a drop, right, Adam?
Yeah, there was a big third down drop that he absolutely has to catch, no question about it. But, you know, other than that, a very strong debut for Alshon Jeffery. I think the reason you saw him targeted less in the second half was a combination of the Bears' offensive line breaking down and not protecting Jay Cutler, and also the Texans making adjustments. The Texans are a really good defense, and they made adjustments throughout that game. And I think rolled to Alshon's side. Jay Cutler told a great story after the game on the Eddie Royal touchdown at the end of the first half. Alshon Jeffery, this was according to Jay, actually came into the huddle and said, hey, look, they're going to roll over the top on me in coverage, and Eddie Royal should be open here. And sure enough, he was, and Jay delivered a strike. So I was surprised that Alshon Jeffery was voted a captain last week. But that's a little glimpse right there of how, yeah, he might be quiet and soft-spoken to us in the media, but he actually knows his football, and I think that's a very good sign for Alshon Jeffery, not only how healthy he's been so far, but also his production yesterday and how he's clearly growing up a little bit and becoming a leader in that locker room.
I thought some of the reasons for hope coming out of this. I mean, I think this defense will keep the Bears in games. And I mean, from guys like Freeman, Trevathan, Akeem Hicks made some plays. I like the young DBs, Adam. I mean, I think there's something to build on there. And that still doesn't mean you're going to win a ton of games, but I think they're going to be in position where they're going to put a lot of heat on opposing quarterbacks.
Yeah, you know, I'm interested to really go back and watch Leonard Floyd's debut a little bit closer. Mm-hmm. There were times when I keyed in on him yesterday from the press box and saw him get just swallowed up by the offensive tackles. But there were also times where he got some pressure and created some disruption. And actually, he did get a sack in the game yesterday. So I think that puts him way ahead of Shea McClellan's pace as a rookie, right?
Yes.
So I think there are some positives there. Look, they didn't have Kyle Fuller, and I thought the secondary played pretty well without him. I really, really, I know I've mentioned him a couple times, I really like DeAndre Hall, this rookie out of Northern Iowa, and I thought he held his own for a fourth-round pick in his first-ever game. I think he's only going to get better, and I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up becoming a regular starter by midseason, actually, DeAndre Hall. He can really play. And that's one of those young guys that you kind of talk about there being some potential on the secondary. Really what this defense needs, though, still, and there I saw some major upgrades at inside linebacker yesterday with Trevathan and Freeman over the guys they had last year. That was very evident. But they still need playmakers. They need plays like Tracy Porter made on the first Texans drive, right, when he just ripped the ball out of the hands of one of the best wide receivers in football in DeAndre Hopkins. So that was encouraging, but they weren't able to get another takeaway the rest of the game. So they got to continue to make those kinds of plays.
Before we let you go, give me 30 seconds on Fox and bad decisions.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a great game for John Fox. I don't think it was a horrible game, but I think you got to challenge that spot when it clearly looked like Brock Osweiler was short. And I don't think giving an answer of saying, hey, you don't always get those reversed is a good enough answer. I understood him challenging that play later on the sideline. It was really just to give his defense a long time out because they were gassed in that situation. And with the way these catch-no-catch rules are in football, hey, maybe you'll get one. I don't have a problem with that. I just think I didn't like the fourth down call either with Cody Whitehair, a young center out there, with Vince Wilfork lined up against him. I think that's a tough spot to put the rookie in. There's no excuse for fumbling a snap there, but it's also not surprising that it happened.
We'll let you go. Blog is where?
WGNradio.com/Bears. And we also did our first ever post-game edition of our podcast, Intentional Grounding. So that's up there, too.
Nicely done by you, Adam Hogue.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
6:43, Dr. Kevin Most joins us now, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Impact every day on Saturday. Thanks to the very generous Jimmy DeCastro, we had our green jacket open. And I was in a golf cart with Larry Wirt, who's a friend of yours as well, Doc.
Yeah.
And he said very nice things about you.
Larry's a wonderful person.
He said his favorite part of this segment is John DeCosta's opening theme.
Yeah. Larry has good judgment and character, too. He said nice things about me?
Yeah, really did. Yeah, he did. Yes, he did. I hope you had a good weekend.
I did. I did. It was, you know, the weather, just like the perfect weather now. This is the time you get out. Even though fall allergies are kicking in, still get outside now where the temperature's reasonable and it's nice. Get some exercise.
Yeah, and get it while you can. Yeah. Sadly, we lost Paul Green on Saturday. Paul Green died from the effects of an aortic aneurysm. We're going to tell some Paul Green stories and have Spike Odell and Rick Pearson after 7. But the medical side of this, anytime somebody that is a celebrity or a celebrity status dies, we can learn from whatever they've gone through, and I think that's a fair legacy. And Paul Green, I'm sure, would appreciate the discussion. An aortic aneurysm, what is it?
Yeah, and Paul, a wonderful person. I had the opportunity to meet him with Spike, and he's just an unfortunate loss because he was a great guy.
Yeah.
So we know about aneurysms in the brain, and essentially an aneurysm is a weakening of the artery. So the artery gets a little bubble in it where it's supposed to be nice and strong. It gets the area that's weak. So we have arteries all over our system. The aortic aneurysm and the aortic abdominal aneurysm is the biggest tube that leads and brings blood to the rest of our body from the heart. And what happens there is often, sometimes it's found incidentally. Someone has abdominal pain, we do a CAT scan, and we notice that there's an aneurysm. And some of them, when they're small, we can just monitor them. And then if it gets to be a little bit bigger as it grows, then we will go in and do surgery, or we'll do something called endovascular surgery, where we'll put essentially a stent in there to protect that from rupturing. There's people that get acute abdominal aortic aneurysms, and they often will present with lowering of blood pressure, excruciating pain, and back pain. And what's happening there is essentially that aorta is rupturing. And unless there's a surgeon in the emergency room at the time, surgery there is almost it's very difficult. Once that ruptures, the chance of survival is very low.
Am I remembering this right? Isn't that what killed John Ritter?
I believe it was, actually.
Yeah.
You're right. Yep. So, you know, for people, you know, it's not like you're going to say, oh, go get checked for an aneurysm. But, you know, if you have abdominal pain and incidentally they notice it, then make sure you do follow up with a vascular surgeon, because some of them are so small that we'll just monitor them. And then the other person, if you have that bad excruciating back pain, get into the emergency room. Let somebody take a look at you, because it can be life-saving.
We'll get traffic here in a second, and then we're going to talk about what walking pneumonia is and Hillary Clinton's health relative to the campaign. And then before we go, someone on staff has a severe eye twitch, so we can't have that. Dr. Kevin Most. All right, we got a bunch of stuff to cover and no time to cover it, Doc. So let's talk about what walking pneumonia is.
So walking pneumonia, there's essentially two spectrums of walking pneumonia. One is the one that we classically use as physicians, and that's one caused by a bacteria, an organism called mycoplasma. Those individuals, highly contagious, it's usually a dry cough. One that is kind of self-limiting. It'll go away if you don't get treated, but if we treat it, it'll go away a little bit quicker. So there's that, and then there's also people that say, oh, I had walking pneumonia, meaning I had pneumonia, but I wasn't sick enough to be in the hospital, so the doctor put me on antibiotics, and he said, go ahead and do what you normally do.
And based on what we know of what Secretary Clinton went through for the weekend, does she have pneumonia or walking pneumonia? Because her doctors are saying shut it down for a couple days.
Yeah, exactly. And they should shut it down, especially for her right now. So she probably has the typical walking pneumonia. In other words, the one caused by mycoplasma. If you've seen her, it's not like she's been coughing in what we call a productive cough, where you cough up sputum. At least the clips that I saw, it looked like she had a very dry cough. So you want the body to help fight that off because, like you said, it can be self-limiting as long as your immune response is good. But they also put her on antibiotics, which is great because that'll help it a little bit quicker. Also, she's contagious for a portion of this time. So you certainly don't want her to be out in big groups spreading this. So, I mean, if she had a job where she sat in an office, you know, or like you, you know, the biggest thing you could do is give it to Dave and Andrea. So, you know, if it's self-limiting, then you can take care of it yourself. But if it's not, then stay home and make sure that you get on the antibiotics and take a lot of fluids and rest.
Hey, Doc Most. So I have a question about that infecting people. If you have this, any kind of illness, and you're with these people one day, and then you're still sick the second day, there's no point in staying home because you've already infected them the first day, correct?
So wrong. She tried to sell this crap to me a week ago. No, you can infect people on the second day because you didn't infect them the first day.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. So if you missed out on your opportunity to infect everybody on day one, come back day two and three to make sure that you get the whole crew knocked out.
Fantastic. Speaking of Sandberg, who you just heard from, how's your eye twitch?
It's still there, but it's reduced because I had this twitching eye for a month coinciding with my wedding. And Doc Most sent us a list of things that could cause an eye twitch.
All right,
aren't a brain tumor or MS.
Yeah, yeah. Or you can't be a giveaway on the second day if you didn't get it the first day. Doc, stress, I assume?
Stress is the number one thing. just generalized overall stress. So people that are going through, you know, a wedding planning and that, yeah, that's pretty stressful. You can do that. Also, people who sit at computers for a long period of time, the eye strain gets happening and you sit there and you're focusing and you're trying to get that paper done and you're looking at the computer for a long time. Your eyes don't like to be in the same position for a long period of time. So what do? We tell you to look away from it. Focus on something further away, 20 feet away for 20 seconds, you know, 20, 20, 20. Every 20 minutes, look away from the computer and focus on something else. It allows the muscles that protect the eye and work on the eye to get a break. It's kind of like if I asked you to hold up your hand and just keep it there straight out, and I want you to hold it there for 20 minutes. After a while, it's going to start shaking because the muscles cannot continue to do that.
Oh, and your eye's a muscle.
Well, your eye has muscles around it that help it focus as well as help open and close the eyelid. But there's other.
So you're suggesting napping regularly, like every hour or so, take a nap.
Well, you do it, so I mean, and you don't have eye twitching, so
no,
it must work.
It really is. It's a legitimate medical theory. Common sense when eye twitching is really the key, and you're not going to die.
Well, plus also said
overuse of caffeine, alcohol can cause it.
Oh, alcohol, Dave, do you have a twitch?
I do not.
All right, just checking.
Okay, but thanks for asking.
I got one other thing. This involves Sandberg's sister and Andre, who apparently had a terrible bike crash. Did you run into each other?
No, mine was first, and hers was yesterday?
Saturday morning.
And she's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you're okay.
I'm okay. I didn't break anything, thank God.
Doc, Andrea's told me something I didn't know. So you got a tetanus shot.
Yeah, I wiped out by the lake. So I was, you know, I skidded along the lakefront.
She skidded all the way to North Avenue Beach. Actually fell by Navy Pier.
I can laugh about it now, but boy, it takes a lot longer these days to recoup from something like that. But yeah, my doctor gave me a tetanus shot.
And said?
That you should have a tetanus shot every 5 to 10 years.
Really?
Good for him. It's good that he did that. Hopefully he also gave you the one that protects you from pertussis as well.
But what happened?
I'm sorry, she's leaving now. She's going back to get an
extra. I'm going back. I wanted another shot, Doc.
So is that the DPT, though, Doc? The same one the kids get?
Correct.
Okay.
So what we found, and we'll talk about tetanus and then pertussis real quick. For tetanus, what we found is that people don't get their booster. And the booster should be every 10 years if you haven't had a break in your skin in 10 years. So if you haven't fallen off your bike, if you haven't cut yourself, if you haven't done anything like that, 10 years is okay. If you've had a break in your skin and you've had a tetanus shot within the last 5 years, you're still protected. Your immune system is ready for that. After 5 years and before 10, if you have a break in the skin, they're going to do that. You fall, you do something in the yard, you get a cut, they're going to give you that booster. People say, why? I have never heard of tetanus. It's lockjaw. No one gets that. Yes, it's in the dirt. We get it all the time. People do get it. So it's not a big deal, but it's something you can be protected from.
And pertussis is the cough.
Pertussis is whooping cough. So we thought when we were young and we got our first immunizations, we thought, okay, that's lifelong. We aren't going to have to worry about it anymore. And if you remember, a few years ago, there was an outbreak at University of Iowa.
Yep.
And then there was another outbreak at University of Illinois. And as we started to look at it and we started doing blood tests on people, we started realizing that their pertussis immunization or strength of the response wanes as we go on. So now we really want to make sure, especially those who are going to be around seniors and young kids, when you get that booster, get the one with pertussis. It costs more, but I'm telling you, if you're going to be a grandfather like you, Steve,
right,
you know, get that because you don't want to have whooping cough around a young child.
Which I did when Abigail was born. All right, now listen, all of this is important information, and we got a bunch of stuff we didn't even get to, which maybe we'll have Doc back for a bonus this week if he has the time. But the fact of the matter is, Hillary Clinton is not disqualified to be president any more than Trump's disqualified to be president. Sorry on both counts. You have given us vital information that Doc just confirmed. Get your tetanus shot.
Yeah, and wear your bike helmet. Be safe.
Andrea's wearing hers this morning.
Yes.
The bike helmet is big, and I see more and more adults riding bikes without them, and I see these young kids on skateboards without them. Andrea and Mary's sister will vouch for it when they look at those helmets and think, boy, if I didn't have this on, what would have happened to my head?
True that.
What would have happened to my head? That's a phrase that pays the rest of the day.
Thanks,
Doc. Doc, thanks, buddy.
You got to talk.
Hold
to
the line a second. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
You don't spend that kind of money to get elected to an office and just simply say, I'm just here to do the right thing for 4 years. One thing about being an elected politician, you really like to be reelected. Not about all these extraneous things, and it's certainly not about personality. People depend on government, those who work in it, and those who receive the services. So it should be about numbers.
First of all, let me say that my views may be somewhat clouded since I just came back from the polar plunging with Lady Gaga, so I demand a little more respect than I normally get. And if you want to know where one of her tattoos are, I am there to tell you. But enough of that. Don't ask. It's madness.
The family of WGN loses another, and it's tough. It's tough. You know, we're not getting any younger around here. And Paul Green passed away after suffering from an aortic aneurysm, which we spoke about with Dr. Most a few moments ago. And 73 is a lot younger than it used to be. I don't know. He's one of those guys you always like seeing him, you know, because he had a smile on his face. Entertaining guy, nice guy, did a ton with the City Club, but certainly others knew him better than I did, including this guy, Spike Odell. Good morning, Spike.
Hey, buddy. How are you, man? Boy, that breaks my heart. I just loved hearing his voice there, that clip you were playing. Yeah, I kind of took that hard yesterday. That was a surprise, as it was to everybody.
Well, and you think about the fact that he lost his son Robert, who's only 36.
Yeah, Bobby.
He fought cancer for forever.
And valiantly, too.
Yeah, and they tried everything. And this is very tough for the family. So I'm really feeling for his wife and his daughter. And
you know what? You said it right in the setup there, Cocky. Family, you used the word family. Yeah. Even though this was not his primary job, he was absolutely WGN family. He just... he had free access. Give him a pass, let him in. He just wandered everywhere and anywhere, and he was definitely family, and I consider him one of the good guys.
No doubt about it. And you had him on every Wednesday for years, talking politics, and we're going to talk to Rick Pearson in a few minutes about this as well. But he was always good to go to whenever a story was breaking.
Yeah, he would come in, and he was on with Uncle Bobby a lot before, and then. And then in the afternoon, when I was doing the afternoon show, he came in and we started to make it clicked. You just feel it when it clicks, you know. And he was very good. I mean, he was good with all types of media. He was good with a quote for a newspaper or up on the television side, but on the radio, he could kind of come in, let his hair down, and be a little be goofier probably and explain it more and spend a little more time in depth. And it just clicked. So we started doing it every week, and I ended up calling it Paul and the Politicians. And that little tag kind of stayed with us. And it went on for years. It started as a little, 3, 4, or 5 minute bit, ended up going to 20 minutes, and then sometimes we spent the whole hour.
Right.
And if it was hot politics, it was an hour and a half with him,
He taught me so much, Spike, about Chicago politics and City Hall, actually where to sit, which row to sit in, and which desk to take in the media office, because that was kind of the hotbed of it. And he always knew, anytime, like Steve said, anytime a story broke, we would call him. If we needed a comment, we would call him, and he'd have his whimsical take on it. But he would always know if an alderman wasn't in the office, he's fishing with so-and-so today. Here's his cell.
He knew where everybody was all the time and kept tabs on it. Yeah, well, that was his game, man, and he knew it well inside and out. Like you say, that's where we went when we had questions, and he always had the answer. What I remember about him coming in every week was he I don't know if you guys remember this, but he was prepared. He always had a notebook.
Yeah,
and he always had things written down
for the kids. That's a piece of paper and a pen.
Right. Yeah, a piece of paper and a pen. But he was always prepared, even though it sounded like he was off the cuff. He knew exactly where he was driving it and where he was going to take it. I remember that. One time something was going on in the world of politics, not unlike it is right now with this election cycle, how goofy it is. But I don't know if it was two aldermen or two presidential candidates, whatever it was. They were just really in each other's face. They were just back and forth, and it was getting ugly. And I called it Yo Mama Politics.
Mm-hmm.
And he laughed. I thought he was going to pee his pants in there. He laughed. He loved that term, Yo Mama Politics. So he always brought that back, Yo Mama Politics.
Oh, yeah. He used it on me a couple times.
Do what?
He used it on me a couple of times.
Yeah.
And I don't believe he gave you credit for it. I don't think he told me it was your line.
Well, he told me that he was teaching it, not teaching it, but using it in the classroom, too. So I always got a kick out of that. He loved the term Yo Mama Politics, which this election cycle certainly is.
Yeah, and you think about it, that's the I don't know if it's ironic, it seems not quite right that this bizarre election will reach a conclusion without Paul Green, because it seems like that's a guy you're going to want to hear from around Election Day.
Yeah, I'm going to keep playing this, you guys, throughout this whole election.
Far be it from me to quote me, but we are the equivalent of a man jumping out of a 40-story window. We're down past 10, and it hasn't hurt yet.
Far be it for me to quote me.
Right. What did you say about Melania?
This is about Melania. This is after Melania's speech, remember, at the at the convention?
Yeah. There has never been a book written. I doubt there ever will be a book written about spouses' speeches at a national convention. It is silly. It just gives the people something to talk about on the air for hour after hour after hour.
Yeah, I think he said hubba hubba.
Yeah, it's just going to let it go. Let it go. Hey, Spike, I was thinking about you yesterday because of the 15th anniversary of 9/11, and it feels like yesterday, the morning you said, there's not much going on.
Yeah.
And then all hell broke loose and the world changed forever.
I will never use that term again. Literally, 1 hour after I said that is when it all happened. Yeah. That was a weird day for me. And I still, I was telling somebody earlier, I was telling Dean yesterday on the air, he called me up and a couple of people later, even though I don't ever want to forget what happened, and I won't, I don't want to relive the audio and the video of that. It bothers me. It really bothers me.
I had trouble watching a couple of the documentaries this weekend because you were so buried in it for so long. And, once you get beyond it, it's tough to go back and look at it again. But because, it's just what you just said. You're not going to forget it. It would be awfully nice if we learned the lessons of it and tried to get back together the way we were in the days after it, at least for a little while.
Yeah, I know what the station has a lot of audio from that morning. When we didn't know, we didn't know what that smoke was coming out of that building to, the final conclusion. But I, for years and years, I never listened to that audio. I didn't want to hear it.
Right.
Because, like I say, it just left me feeling bad or weird. A pit in my stomach. But I know the station did a great documentary on that a few years back.
Yep.
That I took part in, and I did hear some of it. Man, I was just like, it just rewound me right back to that day, right back to that moment.
Yeah, I think that was the 10th anniversary, and here we are at 15. Well, anyway, thanks for the thoughts on Paul Green. We think about his family this morning, and we wish him the best, but he was our family as well. And Rick Pearson will join us in a few minutes to add a little more on Paul Green, as well everybody all day long that knew him, and I'm sure Bill and Wendy and Ro have some things to say later about it as well.
My love and prayers, and I send hugs from Tennessee to Paulie's family and everybody up there. One of the good guys. I love him. I'll miss him. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, buddy. /7:23 now. We continue remembering Paul Green. Paul Green, Professor Paul Green. Died Saturday, an aortic aneurysm, survived by his wife, his daughter, family members, a lot of people in town that loved him, as I said, part of the WGN family, as, of course, is Rick Pearson. You know, Rick, the City Club became a much bigger deal when Paul Green sort of started steering it. That's fair to say, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, it's kind of a must-watch place to go when the various high-level politicians are there to try to make their case for whatever issue of the day is going on.
He was a persuasive guy and a pretty good salesman, as much of a, you know, I'd say the P in professor could stand for promoter as well, because he's a pretty good promoter of Paul. And he was able to get some pretty big names to come through.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, even, you know, in this goofy election cycle, we even had Donald Trump to go cover over there as well. And, you know, he had a very unique style, a humorous style, but all through that was the fact that, you know, having the academic background, having all the research that he put into looking at politics in the city, in the state, the way to analyze trends, and really be able to break them down into a simple, easy to understand way that truly reflected how politics is our second sport in Chicago.
He invited me to come to sit in on one of his classes on a number of occasions, and I never took the opportunity, but I would have been curious to see how he did with kids.
Well, I think there's no doubt that style works very well, and the fact that he was, you know, so successful for decades as a professor, as a teacher at Governor State and then Roosevelt University, that you can't be less than a success to work in that field that long.
Yeah, and you know, the best legacy you can give to somebody, I think, first and foremost, is good guy. And, you know, when I think of Paul Green, don't you, Andrea?
Yeah, absolutely.
Good guy, doesn't good guy come to mind?
Absolutely. You know, he wrote a great book, The Mayors. It was the Chicago political tradition. What a great read. I mean, just the insight and the background, Rick. I mean, you see that all the time, too, that kind of insight that not many of us have.
No, that's absolutely correct. And, you know, I heard you guys talking to Spike and reflected the fact that he was always carrying kind of this folder full of papers that, you know, just showed
the work.
The preparation. I mean, and it was a big sheaf of papers that he carried, little notations about, you know, various ward activities that were going on. He knew where everybody was at any given time.
Here's a, you know, Hamp's coming up in a few minutes, and here's a comparison that's never been made. Hamp and Paul Green had this in common. Both of them spent all weekend coming up with two or three lines they could drop in at the perfect time.
Right.
Because Paul Green would come in, and he'd throw a line or two at you, and he'd try to make it sound like he just thought of it, and you know he thought of it in his car or at home or somewhere else, and started smiling ear to ear, and he couldn't wait to work it in.
Yeah, but that was kind of the way that he brought you into the conversation as well.
Right.
That he knew it would get attention. And, you know, he was so much of a, you know, of course we know him here, but he was so much of a go-to guy basically for the national media as well, that, you know, when issues would break in Chicago, he was on everybody's, I hate to use the term Rolodex, if anybody knows what that still is. But
kids, a Rolodex is a series of cards with information on phone numbers. Back to you, Rick.
He definitely was on every reporter, every national political reporter's Rolodex, and was able to give that quick, concise opinion on what is going on in the city of Chicago.
Well, I'm going to miss him. Going to miss seeing him stumbling around the seventh floor, popping his head in everybody's meetings, just saying hello, and then bopping off to the next one.
Yeah.
And as I said before the break, Rick, it's a little weird having an election this goofy and not having Paul around to point out how goofy it is.
No, that's exactly right. And he certainly, you know, he had a series of lines about this election. And for him not to see the conclusion of it is truly sad.
And if you see, you know, Pat Brady or Rick or someone else on the street, and you go up to him and go, tell me one of the stories you couldn't tell on the air. Because Paul had a few of those that were great as well. Not about him, about other people.
Exactly.
All right, but all the best. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
That's Rick Pearson, host of the Sunday Spin, Sunday mornings at 7 a.m. And, of course, in the Chicago Tribune and chicagotribune.com. And you know what I like to say. Would it kill you? Get the paper.
Get the paper.
Get a couple of copies. 728 on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
You know, this isn't foosball. This is football, folks.
Not football.
All right? You go into training camp, and I don't know how all these Bear players got hurt. I have no idea. Maybe rushing to the cars to go to the bars.
When Texans decided, okay, it's time to play big boy football, we weren't prepared because we never prepared in practice.
We don't do anything, camp. Dan.
You play to win. You do not poke a hornet's nest with a stick.
I'm sitting in the WGN studios, and I can figure it out.
Yeah, just another quiet day for Hamp, OB, and Kaz. They're great yesterday. And look, I'm like you. I'd like a really good Bear season, but I'd be lying if I told you I wasn't looking forward to hearing Hamp and OB after that performance in the second half yesterday. Let's go live now to Dan Hampton. Good morning, buddy.
Well, I don't know if you could get the flavor of the postgame, which is the ill-tempered remarks we just had there. And this is the real sad part about it. And, you know, everybody, you know, to every swan is a season and comes a season. And okay, we lost the opener in a game that we were not only in, but matching up very nicely, and we should have not only been able to win, but the way we let it, you know, kind of fritter away, it just galls me. And again, I just, sooner or later, somebody, you know, has to kind of ring home the importance of this sense of urgency. We did nothing intelligent in the second half yesterday on offense. Dow Loggins, the offensive coordinator, was asleep at the switch. We made no adjustments. And you know what? The Houston Texans just reared up and said, hey, not here, not in our house. And, you know, we played right into their hands.
The Texans look like winners. The Bears look like losers in the second half. The game doesn't end in the third quarter. And halfway through the third quarter, the Bears look like check, please.
That's a great observation. You know, and especially when your quarterback starts getting batted around, everybody on the team, I mean, you know, that's like, you know, just a signal to the rest of the squad that, oh, no, here we go. And, you know, for the most part, we haven't had that, you know, with Cutler for quite a while. And by hook and crook, whoever comes up with the brilliant idea of starting a kid that a year ago was playing in Kansas at left tackle, all through training camp, in the preseason games, very, very little in those preseason games, by the way, at left guard, and then he gets 10, count them, 10 actual snaps in a preseason game, and then they start him at center against maybe the most dominant defensive line in all of football on the road. It's a crying shame. I'm not, and this kid, Cody White here, he's going to be a good player. Yeah, he's a nice kid. I got it. But if Ted Larson was not good enough to start, why the hell is he on this team? Yeah, that is a place you do not – it's like putting a green-as-grass rookie at quarterback, unprepared, after never playing a snap or 10 snaps in preseason, you know, at New England and saying, okay, do something. It's just – it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, lots of Fox questions and lots of questions about what happened to be continued here. Sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. Dave Ennett, say hi to the Hall of Famer.
Mr. Hampton, good morning.
So well, we've
Mr. Cat, you've had a tough weekend.
Yeah, I think you could say that. So now defensively, and I heard you and OB say this on the post game yesterday, that defensively, this is a team which will keep the Bears in games. I mean, and they did show something yesterday. But they did give up some plays, and there's no question. I mean, they're going up against a couple of pretty good receivers there in Fuller and Hopkins. But what did you see that you liked from this defense that maybe bodes well for the rest of the season?
Three or four things that kind of jumped out at me. You know, first and foremost, you know, it's a competent defense. We last year when we lined up, it was like you know, Central Florida versus Alabama. We didn't have the athletes to match up. You know, and I've told this story for years. You know, we physically, you know, we would basically overwhelm people.
Right.
Well, we were overwhelmed at certain positions, i.e., Shea McClellan, and on a weekly basis. Well, not anymore. You know, so now it's more about chemistry and the different schematics, how we're going to implement some of these guys. You know, Leonard Floyd started the game. Okay, that's cool. Okay, fine, got it. Is he a better football player today than the guy that he displaced, which would be Lamar Houston? I think not. I don't. And again, it's almost like they were trying to, oh, well, we got, you know, we had some rookies start, so wow, we drafted good. And that you play your best 11. But the bottom line was, this is a defense that is so vastly upgraded at the interior linebacker position. The Danny Trevathan and Jarrell Freeman, they combined for like 27 tackles yesterday. And when they threw the ball underneath, I mean, it was tackle down right now. No chasing and, oh, let it, you know. I mean, they were covering those receivers like blankets. They were attacking the line of scrimmage. There was one play where Danny Trevathan took on the fullback. You know, everybody's thinking, okay, it's been, you know, 15 years now. Let's try to go back to running a fullback. Nobody's prepared for it. Well, guess what? Danny Trevathan lit the fullback up, threw him, and shed the block and made the tackle in the hole. I mean, some really good stuff. Eddie Goldman had some spots. Akeem Hicks was in the backfield, forced a fumble. We should have been able to get it. But, you know, we had some corners get nicked up. Jacoby Glenn had to leave. Then we had to bring in a rookie haul. And, by the way, those Houston receivers, one of them, you know, was timed like at 4.22 and the other one at 4.38 and all this. I mean, they could fly.
Right.
So all that being said, you can't really hang this on the defense. They play, and you can't hang it on Cutler. It was basically a combination of whatever happened. We made no adjustments in the second half on offense to combat Romeo Crennel doing a lot of the exotic blitzes up the middle, taking advantage of a green-as-grass rookie that was incapable of being able to get this thing stopped. And again, it's not his fault, but this is the NFL. They smell weakness. They smell blood. Here they come. And they're going to do it on Monday night. You better believe Philadelphia, their defensive coordinator is drawing up blitzes to take advantage of this very same thing.
More with Hamp in just a second, sponsored by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. First at 747, it's traffic.
An animal!
Dan Hampton anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal!
It's time for Dan Hampton.
The Hall of Famer. The little hamster. Dan Hampton joins us again. Yeah, listen, Hamp, you know, you were talking about adjustments and the frustration of not being able to handle adjustments or adjust yourself. Look, any coach in the NFL, you may not say it publicly, but they'd be happy to tell their friends and their family how hard they work. And I'm not for a minute going to tell you it's not a difficult job, because it is a difficult job. It's a time-consuming job. But, Hamp, isn't part of the adjustments presuming and assuming before a game that if they do this, we have to do that, and if we do that, they might do this? In other words, at halftime, shouldn't you be ready for a couple of options?
Absolutely. And see, again, Dell Loggins was a pseudo offensive coordinator a couple of 3 years ago down at the Tennessee Titans, and really no success. And, you know, this is one of the things that you have to develop. And it's not checkers, it's chess. You don't react. You basically premeditate what you expect them to do, and then you have a contingency about what you're going to do in a proactive manner. So it's, and that's why there's, you know, there's only 32 offensive coordinators on the planet. They're, you know, it's a different gig. And Of course, this kid, Dow Loggins, he was a walk-on quarterback at Arkansas. I actually texted Brian McCaskey, saying, hey, the Razorbacks won in Texas yesterday. It's a great omen. Let's go, blah, blah, blah. And I was so disappointed. The second half, when you look at the drive sheet, which is in the stat pack, it goes interception, punt, 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 out on downs, the last drive of the game. Now, that is, there's nothing else to say. I mean, that is futility to the extreme. And if you are wanting to be, respected, not only by your opponents, but your own team. And see, that's the bigger picture here. When you get in here, and this is what happened with the Bear defense. When Mel Tucker was the defensive coordinator, and he didn't have answers, it didn't take long for that to, pervade into the team where everybody's like, hey, this guy doesn't know what the hell he's doing. Well, guess what? When you don't make adjustments, when you don't start, doing certain, like, east-west blocking on those interior stunts and getting your quarterback out, bringing somebody in motion, cracking on the outside rusher, getting Cutler out of the pocket, getting him away from harm, danger, and giving him a chance. And when you basically, curl up in a ball and let him keep tomahawking your quarterback, the rest of the team, they're horrified as well.
What's the best weapon that this team has on offense, Hamp?
That's Alshon.
Right.
And,
so
it's great to see Eddie Royal, 31-yard punt return. Mm-hmm. He had four catches for almost 60 yards. I used to call him Eddie Rumor. Now he's Eddie Reality. He's actually making a contribution. This is what he was expected, and we needed him to do all through last year. But as everyone else, Kevin White quitting on a route. That's the thing. It's one of those fool me once kind of situations. I remember this happening with Devin Hester and Cutler. Devin Hester not knowing what he has to do, not what he wants to do, but what he has to do, and either are shutting down, are quitting on a route. When your quarterback, it's not Bewitch. He can't read your mind. He doesn't know you're shutting down. He throws the ball, and it's an easy pick. Well, guess what? That trust will be violated for a long time. It's going to have to be a lot of work, a lot of game-type situations where he does do the right thing time and time and time again before the quarterback would trust him, or any quarterback with a brain. Because once you see a receiver quit on a route and, basically you throw up a cheap pick, man, you don't look that way very often.
How'd you feel about the John Fox no challenge?
I think it was a combination of, on the road, especially in a game like that where you could feel, the momentum was shifting and we're going to need those timeouts. And he probably is thinking, and again, most of the information, 95% of the call comes from someone upstairs on the sideline. You can't see anything. I was watching my daughter's volleyball game the other day from the ground floor. You couldn't see nothing.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is, somebody up there, basically, they curled up in a ball and didn't think that they should have challenged it. They got a great spot, I'll tell you that. But sooner or later, you're going to have to be proactive. And just like you want your players to fight, the head coach needs to fight as well.
Last word, Dave, and I got a minute.
Well, I kind of hate to bring this up, but you're coming home, so everybody thinks you'll play better at home, and yet the Bears have won a total of 3 games at home the last 2 seasons. They've actually been a better road team. Hamp, do you dial up a bunch of blitzes to go against a rookie quarterback next Monday night?
It'll be fascinating to see what – Buddy used to say you blitz the dumb ones and you zone the smart ones. Mm-hmm. And, we're going to find out what Vic Fangio thinks about this kid, Carson Wentz. He was the number 2 overall pick. He starts. He comes through. He has a pretty nice day throwing the football for the Eagles. Here's the thing. More importantly, what we do against him, I'm worried about what our offense will do against the Philadelphia defense, who was, just a garden variety defense last year. The Texans are good. J.J. Watt, he's a Hall of Famer. And Whitney Merciless and these guys, They can all play. Will we, in a proactive manner, go out and control the game? You know, again, for a half, I was really happy. I was very excited about the way we were playing. But you can't go to sleep. You got to play the second half. We didn't. And, you know, I'll just say this. On September 11th, 15th anniversary, it was wonderful that our wonderful country had no violence. And the only person, the only thing that got killed was the Bears in the second half.
That's exactly right. And the best news for you for the weekend, Miss Arkansas won the Miss America pageant.
You're kidding.
No. See, I told you there was
Clinton.
Yeah, Clinton's on a – hey, I need to get her number.
He'll be going to congratulate her.
Yes, he will in his own special way. It's a great day in Hampton, sponsored by your Northwest – I'm all choked up about the Miss America pageant. It's the great Dan Hampton, sponsored by your Northwest Indiana, Chicago, and Chevy dealers. And we're back with the news next.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Or kiss me, kiss me good.
Dean Richards live at Channel 9. Good morning.
Good morning.
We have been officially placed in a basket of deplorables. I'll get you more details when I have them.
Oh, I love a basket of deplorables.
I don't know if you can order that online.
Add that with the grapes and the oranges.
I want to say hi to Pat Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet. That's his full name. And he has taken Catherine and Patrick apparently to school now. Catherine and Patrick are clearly the stars of the family. It's not Sandberg or Boyle. And Catherine and Patrick don't know that my name is Steve. They think my name is Steve Cochran.
That's what I always thought, too.
So Steve Cochran.
I'm learning. I'm
Steve
just Cochran. Learning now.
Steve Cochran. Steve Cochran. Did you have a good weekend?
And we're going to say hello to
and have a great day at school, you guys.
Each and every
focus.
Each and every one of you commuters out there, we're going to say hello to each and every one of you
it's
individually
good idea.
From
Let's
now.
Let's start with the A's. Good morning,
anyone
Anne.
Could say hello, everybody,
Anna.
But we're doing this one
Amy.
By one.
Abigail.
Aardvark. There's actually a listener named Aardvark. Did you know that?
That's great. Why not?
Why not?
All right, we got a lot to get to here in the show business world, and some of it matters. You were in Toronto.
Very little matters.
How much fun did you have in Toronto?
It was super busy. It's when you're there working, it's not as much fun as you might think. But
it's a nice city.
It's a beautiful city. The weather was great. It was very much like it was here, I understand. But super busy. This is the biggest film festival in North America. They show like 400 films from over 70 countries. Not just little ones. A lot of film festivals are just, you know, like little films. Nothing wrong with that. Documentaries, foreign films, etc. This is the first official rollout in North America of the films that are going to be Oscar movies. And so these are the really, really, really big ones. One of them is Denzel Washington's new movie. A remake of Magnificent Seven.
Do we need a remake of Magnificent Seven?
I don't think it hurts to have it.
This is not a review, though.
This is not a review. I enjoyed it. That's not a review. But I actually did enjoy it. It's Denzel. It's Chris Pratt. It's Ethan Hawke. A whole bunch of...
kind of a cool cast.
It's a really cool cast, and I enjoyed watching it.
Would you like to hear Denzel talking to you?
I enjoyed sitting down with not only Denzel, but his director on this movie, Anton Fuqua.
Whoa. What's
Anton,
the language?
Anton Fuqua.
Oh, that's his name. Suddenly you're going blue.
Hey, Antoine. Fuqua.
Exactly.
Man.
Yeah.
Anton directed Denzel in Training Day. Denzel and Ethan Hawke, as a matter of fact, in Training Day.
Hilarious movie.
Laugh Riot. Okay. But what I love, and you're going to love this, Denzel mocking his director.
Oh, good.
Mocking the man as I was sitting down with him.
Give me something I can use. What? How's that going to get in the picture? How's that going to get in the picture? How's that going to get in that?
That's the other Antoine.
Are you reliving the whole...
oh, my God.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't realize I'd do it that much.
So opening night at TIFF is always a pretty big night. I'm told that last night was the biggest ever. Most people, most crews, most everything.
Really?
What's it like when you step out of the car and it's got to be overwhelming?
There were a lot of people out there. That's when I said, man, Chris Pratt is big.
That Guardians of the Galaxy.
Man, I got to get me one of these Jurassic 3s or something, man. Look a brother up. I know you know somebody.
Denzel in a great mood.
Well, he's always good with you, isn't he?
He's fantastic.
By the way, I don't think I'm not going to call you up by calling it TIFF. What was that move?
That's because I'm way too busy to say Toronto TIFF. International Film Festival.
Well, that's crazy here at TIFF. Lovey, where is my scarf?
That's what we people in the industry call it, Steve. We don't have time to say Toronto International Film Festival.
Fantastic.
There's a great movie with Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone called La La Land that's going to be one of the big ones of the year. The Snowden movie, I wasn't crazy about it, but it's getting a lot of buzz and probably we'll get lots of Oscar buzz. Oliver Stone, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, they were at TIFF also.
Aren't you a little bit embarrassed?
They were TIFFing. TIFFing the light. Fantastic.
Got it.
And also, by far the most controversial film at the film festival is this remake of Birth of a Nation. It's originally 1915, silent film.
Yeah, racist.
Totally, completely racist. Story of two families during the Civil War. It's been remade now into a story about a slave rebellion. Nate Parker is the star of the film, the director, the writer of the film, the producer. This movie is also quite spectacular to see it, but there's a cloud hanging over this film because Nate Parker was involved in a rape case 17 years ago, a rape case for which he was committed. He was acquitted. That's a very important part of this whole thing. But people are very upset, saying that they will not go see a movie in which somebody who was involved in a rape case is involved. Kind of a Woody Allen, Roman Polanski kind of situation, separating the art from the artist. Some people just say absolutely they won't go.
But you say it's a good movie.
It's a good movie. And we didn't think that actually Nate would even show up for interviews because he is really the subject of a lot of controversy. But he did. And I asked about it because, if there's an uncomfortable question to ask.
Right. You love uncomfortable in the room.
At TIFF. I love uncomfortable at TIFF.
All right, roll it.
Especially. So we kind of got an answer from him.
Right.
Honestly, if I can speak kind of frankly about it, I mean, people are talking about the controversy surrounding the film. And I wonder if you're concerned if that's going to hurt the film and
reality is I've addressed this, and I'm sure I'll address it more in future forums. We're here because of a film. Okay. There's so many people, 400 people worked on this film and put their blood and sweat and tears in it. And here we are at Toronto International Film Festival. And the film is playing.
Right.
I think that says something.
All right. So, he kind of addresses my question and then diverts,
He was sort of hoping you'd never bring it up again.
Veers off to the right. I mean, we only have a certain amount of time with him. I asked him, I went back and tried to redirect it three times, and he was clearly just playing out the clock on that. But I give him credit for showing up, at least. He didn't need to do that. But one of the co-stars in his film is Gabrielle Union.
She's pretty.
She is gorgeous and nice, and by the way, is moving to Chicago with her husband, one Mr. Dwayne Wade.
Yeah.
They're going to be blocks away from you downtown where they're moving.
They might have a space in this building they could use.
It turns out once the mattress store moves in on the first floor, there may still be room. So she is not only in this movie, but in real life, Gabrielle Union is a rape survivor. She was raped when she was a teenager. And she has She has written an amazingly powerful op-ed piece in the LA Times. I urge you to Google it and read it. And I asked her about this distraction factor also for the film. And she was not dodging questions at all.
There was talk of, Gab, maybe you shouldn't go, your brand, and you shouldn't. And I said, no, my brand is being somebody who gives a damn about people and speaking up when it's uncomfortable. And I don't mind doing that. I take that a lot of pride in that. So when I was standing up there, just literally, will she show up? And I'm standing there, I'm like, hell yes, I will show up and I will keep showing up.
Very brave of you to have participated in the first place and then to have been there and now to be talking to us now about
it. For me personally, I'm not a fan of the word brave because brave indicates, some sort of heroic action that you would not otherwise take. I take these actions every day. I've been taking them since I was 19 years old. I took it before that when I was a kid standing up, you know, for people who were bullied. Like, because I was raised to do the right thing. And I think for a lot of us who think that we're being raised to do the right thing, it's not, you're not a good person to stay silent in the face of any kind of injustice that you see. And it's not brave to do your job as a decent human being that is a part of society. So, I mean, thank you for the kind words, but it's not brave. It should be standard.
If I didn't love her enough already, she is, just so articulate and so passionate.
Good for
her.
And
she may not think she's brave. She is brave. I mean, she's, you know, basically standing up to the director of this film and saying she has some problems with, this whole thing. So all that said, I was so conflicted going to this movie because I get it. I understand people's, concerns and their outrage about this. And then I saw the movie and I left going, this is really quite an amazing movie. It's more than just a slave drama. It's so much more than that. So.
Look, we're all guilty of it, right? I mean, I've done it as well. You really probably don't have the right to be offended until you've consumed the product or at least part of it in too many times. And as I said, I've done this as well. I'll buy into hype or I'll do something where I go, I'm never going to see that because, well, maybe I ought to see it.
Yeah, see it, based on the product itself.
Right.
Again, Nate Parker was acquitted of rape, sort of on a technicality, but still, he was not found guilty of rape. So I think judge the movie on the movie. So.
Yeah, they're parallel lines.
Yeah.
Stand by. We got more to come in a second.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 9720.
Wintrust Community Bank's Hour continues. Time is short, but Dean and I have important information. Dean, I watched the, in Mary Vanderbilt, I don't know if you saw this, I watched the Miss America talent competition last night.
Oh, yeah, if I had been in town.
So there were, I don't know, I think there's 10 women, and they find out they're finalists, and then they immediately have to leap out of a chair and do their talent competition. I mean, there was more cheese in that thing than Wisconsin.
Yeah, it was pretty cheesy. I didn't see the whole thing. I did see Miss Arkansas's dance routine, though.
Was she the tap dancer?
No, she did the jazz dance thing.
There was a
smash song.
She was the winner, right?
She was the winner, yeah.
There was a tap dance, a jazz dance.
She was the one in the white with the jazz dance. I missed the rest of it.
There was a gymnastic routine, and Gabby Douglas was one of the judges.
That's awkward.
That's not good.
No.
My favorite part of these shows is when they ask the questions.
Well, the questions, but you missed the baton twirling.
I did miss baton.
There was a, what it felt like? It felt like a Christopher Guest movie. It felt like I'm making fun of the Miss America pageant. And this girl gets up and she twirls like three batons at once. And I'm thinking, this is not a skill you're ever going to need. Ever. Ever.
Yet there are still people doing it, believe it or not.
Well, I mean, good for all of them. They're beautiful girls.
Look at the majorettes and the big bands. They have a baton twirler in the front.
Yeah, I suppose.
That's your only job.
All right, so let me just amend my statement. After the age of 22.
True.
You know, unless it's a New Year's Eve party and things are slow.
Or it's America's Got Talent. You can go on that.
I just don't get it.
You don't hang out at the senior citizen places where I do.
Yeah?
That sounds wrong.
The definition of baton twirling is a manipulation of a metal rod, which is very similar to golf. So one would argue that
golf is totally appropriate. Golf is appropriate, right, and good.
Golf is a total skill.
Yes. Yes.
It's a hobby.
It's a skill.
And every time I hit a good shot, I throw the club in the air, I twirl around six times, and I catch it before it hits the ground.
While doing splits.
Mine always seems to mysteriously break, though.
That's a whole other conversation, really, isn't it? All right, a couple other things, because we're way late here. There was an interesting thing that I don't think very many people knew. Pete Davidson from the cast of SNL. His dad was a firefighter who died on 9/11.
Died on 9/11, and Pete Davidson was 7 years old when his father died. He posted a lovely tribute to his dad yesterday. Of course, funny, because he's a really funny comedian. Posted a picture of his, he looks like he's 4 or 5 years old in this picture. He and his dad are chugging Heinekens, which is, I think is funny. And it's a beauty, on Instagram he puts, I can't believe it's been 15 years since my hero went away, I miss you every day, Dad. It's beautiful. And somebody had presented him when he was a boy with his dad's old work boots from the fire station. And they're a pair of dirty old shoes that he's got on display. And, you know, he posted a picture of those saying, you know, these were my hero's old work shoes, and then made fun of his dad for wearing Skechers.
Right. Right. How effing embarrassing.
How effing embarrassing, right.
And one other thing, Elizabeth Vargas on Friday night, and granted, she's promoting a book, but it's a book about her own battle with alcoholism and how not only did it almost cost her a job at ABC numerous times, it created a huge problem in her family, caused her to end up losing her marriage. And listen, I've loved alcoholics my whole life, and I'm here to tell you that I was very impressed by her. I thought she was incredibly honest, and there's the word brave coming up again, but really brave to come out and talk about it. So we're going to see if we can get her on to talk about the book. No, she's on tomorrow. How fast is that? She's on tomorrow morning at 8:40 to talk about it. But yes. Elizabeth Vargas, I was very impressed.
Yeah, it's I agree that it's very brave, and I think part of the process of healing also is to be able to speak freely. Her book is called Between Breaths, A Memoir of Panic and Addiction. I can't wait to hear that. Did you say tomorrow on this station?
Yes.
Here on WGN?
Mm-hmm.
Steve Cochran Show?
I'm Steve Cochran Show. That's exactly right.
Home of TIFF information whenever you need
right.
it?
That's right. I always wonder what a TIFF district is. It's where Dean does a film festival. all right, buddy. I'll see you.
Bye.
Big story next, 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
841, Hillary Clinton has pneumonia. Previously discussed on this show in the big story. And also with Dr. Most this morning, but we'll kick it around again here in a little bit. In addition to that, the much worst part of her weekend, as far as I'm concerned, is the idiotic state of the basket of deplorables. I mean, good God. Come on, you're better than that.
I completely agree. When I heard that, I thought, oh, please, please do not have just said that.
Meanwhile, audio of Donald Trump has surfaced, where on 9/11, he actually said to WWOR-TV in New York that his building was now the tallest building in New York after the towers had fallen. It was literally the same day.
Come on. Again, please.
Just incredible. Incredible.
Maybe we liked it better when they didn't talk. Remember, Hillary had a press conference last week on the tarmac?
Exactly.
Maybe just before. Well, no.
For you know what would be good? And I would say either one could make money with this. Campaign logo duct tape that they could put over their mouths. So in an effort to try to get to the bottom of some of the issues that actually matter, let's talk about the VA and Veterans Affairs for a second, because you got Trump screaming that Hillary doesn't care. You got Trump screaming the VA is a mess. Veterans are treated shabbily. You know how big a deal it is on this show to me. So let's go to somebody who deals with this every day, and that's Suzanne Gordon, co-editor of the Cultural and Politics of Healthcare Work at Cornell University Press and an expert on the VA and Veterans Affairs, who's nice enough to join us this morning. Hey, good morning, Suzanne.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Nice to talk to you. Awful lot of hype about this issue. So in your world, what is the current state of the VA?
Well, you know, the VA is a pretty complicated agency because it's actually three. It's cemeteries, benefits, and health care. And what they're focusing on is health care, the Veterans Health Administration. And I've been writing a book about the VA health care for about 3 years and talking to veterans and visiting healthcare, VA healthcare facilities, VHA healthcare facilities all over the country. And the thing that people are really forgetting in this debate is how good the system is. In fact, I wish I was eligible. I'm 71. It's a little late for me to join the military. But
oh, don't count yourself out now.
I would like to count myself in, but, you know, Trump is completely wrong, and Hillary is doesn't entirely get it, but gets it better than he does. The one who got it the best was Bernie Sanders, but he's out of the running. And we have in the VA, the United States has spent more than 70 years, almost since the Civil War, but particularly after World War II, investing in the Veterans Health Administration and has created actually one of the best healthcare systems in the country, if not the world. There are problems. The problems have to do with underfunding and with also problems of leadership in, in over management, sometimes in the central office in D.C. But the quality of care that veterans get when they're allowed to get it is really terrific. And one of the biggest problems in the VA, or the Veterans Health Administration, is that Congress has limited eligibility to veterans. And a lot of the stuff that you hear about wait times really has to do with what our congressionally appointed representatives have done to limit access to the VA. Not every, most Americans think that every veteran can go to the VA. That's absolutely not true. You have to have either a service-related condition, or you have to be low income, or both.
What a stunning development that Congress could have screwed this up. Andrea, say hi to Suzanne.
Hey, Suzanne. You know, here in Illinois, I know we have a great VA system. However, we have been plagued with long lines, vets not seeing doctors quickly. There have been just problems galore here. And I know we have actually two vets running for Senate. Tammy Duckworth and Mark Kirk, both are veterans, both have
Duckworth is terrific, yeah.
Yeah, they've both hopped in to try and help, but what can be done? I mean, because these have been issues since, my father was a veteran and he had to wait in these long lines. This is 10 years ago.
You know, I mean, I think you have to really put, I'm so glad you asked that question, because you really have to put wait times in the context of the broader American healthcare system. I just tried to get a new primary care doctor in San Francisco, and there were no wait times in many practices because they're closed to new patients. You know, try to get an appointment with a dermatologist in Boston or in Minneapolis, and you have to wait 265 days. In Boston, you have to wait 32 days to see a cardiologist, and 66 days, excuse me, that's D.C., 32 days, and 66 days in Boston to see a primary care doctor. I mean, we are not producing enough doctors, particularly primary care doctors and specialists in the American healthcare system, to see the patients that are needed to be seen. And if the VA had all the money in the world tomorrow, and it was like it, and it has very cumbersome hiring procedures, which need to be fixed, and they're trying to fix. If we had all the money in the world, and if all those problems would be fixed, they could not hire enough primary care physicians because there simply are not enough to hire.
Is there incentive to work for the VA?
Oh yeah, because you're not driven by cost, you're not driven by this crazy idea that you have to see 35 patients a day in 10 minutes. I mean, one of the biggest problems in primary care in the private sector is that people have 10-minute visits.
Absolutely.
It's crazy. You can't diagnose, you can't treat, you can't do prevention, you can't advise patients.
And part of the problem is because of our idiotic system, doctors are spending more than half of their day on paperwork. So the only way for them to not be there 14 hours a day is to give you a 10-minute visit and get their paperwork done and eventually go home.
Right. Well, and one of the big problems in healthcare and private sector is this crazy computerized electronic health records that are killing people. They just had a big article in the Journal of the American Medical Association about how much doctors hate the computerized systems that are out there by private vendors. And the VA has a much better system. They have much more time with patients. You know, the other thing you have to remember is that the patients in the VA are sicker, older, and poorer than patients in the private sector.
That's true.
I mean, you know, the average 65-year-old or 70-year-old like me who goes to my doctor in the private sector, because I, like, wasn't in a war, and I didn't have all these terrible exposures, and I don't have PTSD, and I don't have more mental health conditions. The average 65-year-old going to private sector doc has three medical problems. The average Vietnam veteran has between 9 and 12. So, you know, the problem is we need to fix the VA. We need to fix what needs to be fixed in the VA. But we can't forget what's great about it. It's a leader in telemedicine. It has integrated mental health and primary care. So, you know, right now it's got one of the best mental health systems in the country. We need more of it, not less of it, and we need to fund it. And let me tell you another big problem. 300,000 veterans right now can't get VA benefits because they had discharges other than honorable discharges that make them ineligible for VA services. And a lot of the reason why they have those discharges is because they had mental health problems acquired in the military, and they can't get in. And Congress could solve that
tomorrow. Really? They could solve it tomorrow.
Suzanne, 12 counties in Illinois now have veterans courts. Our governor just signed this law about 3 weeks ago.
Absolutely.
So will we see more of those courts now, and will that help break down some of the problems?
And those courts are one of the great things about the VA. They're all over the country. What private sector healthcare system is going to set up a veterans court? You know, this is a special court where so the veterans have sponsors, they have programs that try to keep them out of jail. Veteran homelessness is a huge problem. The VA is the only one attacking veteran homelessness, thanks to the Arrera Center in New Haven, Connecticut, which is a VA, an amazing VA facility. They've almost ended homelessness in Connecticut. I mean, I spent a lot of time at Fort Miley, the VA facility in San Francisco, and it is astonishing the kind of care that veterans get.
Well, see, this is really good news. This is really good news, and I want to have you back on. Let me put you on hold for a second. Pardon me. I'm going to have to see a doctor.
Yeah.
But this is really good news, because what Suzanne is saying is there's much better news out there about the VA than we think there is. And don't buy into the hype. And don't believe everything you're hearing. And Trump doesn't know what he's talking about. And Hillary certainly could learn more. So how about that? A little upbeat take on how we're taking care of veterans. Doesn't apply to everybody, but it's certainly better than we thought it was. And she knows. She's in the middle of it every day. All right, let's do traffic. And we'll come back and talk a little bit about Hillary's health in a moment. Or what we know of it.
You could put half of Trump supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
Wow.
Racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it. And unfortunately, there are people like that. And he has lifted them up.
She's such a terrible candidate. It's unbelievable.
Well, there was no need for that.
Absolutely not. The only difference between that speech and Trump's opening speech last summer about getting into the race and Mexicans is Trump didn't say half the Mexicans.
He just said
he only tempered it by saying, I guess some of them are decent people.
Yeah.
You know, it's just she's got to be smarter than that. And she, you know, she can blame it on a lot of things. But at the end, it's her fault. And whoever vetted that speech and wrote that speech, because to say half of Trump supporters, look, I got a lot of friends that are Trump supporters. I actively try not to talk to them about it, but they're hardworking, terrific people. Every Trump supporter is not a hood-wearing Klan member. Every Trump supporter is not some thug looking to beat up a Hillary supporter or a Bernie supporter. I mean, come on, grow up. We have political differences in this country. You all know how I feel about Trump. He's a garbage fire between the ears, but that's my opinion, and that doesn't lessen yours if you like him.
Plus, if she wins and is the president, she will then be the president of those, quote,
that's the thing,
deplorables.
That's the exact point. This is the same woman who said, my number one enemy are the Republicans, you know, during the debates with Bernie a while ago, and said it on a campaign trail. You can't do that. Look, I don't even care if she believes it. She's got to be the president of the United States. And it was Barack Obama's biggest problem. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama was too much of a Democrat in the White House. You have to be both.
You do.
You're not going to throw your party out the window, and of course you're going to be 60-40, some days 90-10. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, she comes off, every time she does something like this, she comes across as exactly who people think she is. Some sort of elitist who's been playing by her own rules since the 80s, who isn't fit to be president, not because she has pneumonia, but because she thinks she knows better than everybody. And if you're a Republican or a Trump supporter, well, good damn luck to you, because you're going to need it.
You've got to find that middle line, that middle of the road path.
Now, to her credit, she apologized for it. But when you have trust ratings at her level, how much do you think the apology means? Not a lot. Keep in mind, this is largely what took Mitt Romney down. And what took Mitt Romney down in his 47% speech was some weasel with a phone recording grainy video and terrible audio of a private fundraising speech.
Oh, yeah.
She knew there were TV cameras in the room, and she still said it.
I know. Although it was funny how Trump's response was, that's the worst line of this entire campaign.
Yeah, not quite.
I don't think so.
Not quite.
I don't think so.
As a matter of fact, you got cut one. Give me cut one, Jake, when you're ready on the list, because I want to play this for you in a second. But before we get to that, segueing just briefly into the flu, here's the deal on the flu, because we're late. The flu is, she's entitled to have the flu. You know, she's entitled to be sick. What she's not entitled to do is not tell the truth about it. Mm-hmm. They came out with a statement within an hour. She's canceled a couple events on the West Coast. Okay? That's being open about her health concerns. She's a 68-year-old woman with the flu. She's not going to die from this. She may choose at some point down the road that this is a bit too much for her. I highly doubt it. She'll get better and she'll campaign. Where are Trump's real health records? The guy that eats Kentucky Fried Chicken on the airplane.
He says those are coming.
And by the way, Trump's weekend wasn't so clean either. WWOR is Channel 9 in New York. Do we own that? Isn't that our station?
No.
We own Channel 9?
We own
PIX. Yeah. Trump, on the night of 9/11, was interviewed by Channel 9 in New York. He owned a building in New York that was the tallest building. The World Trade Centers went up, and it wasn't the tallest building. Here's Trump.
Donald, you have one of the landmark buildings down in the financial district, 40 Wall Street. Did you have any damage, or did you know what's happened down there?
Well, it was an amazing phone call I made. 40 Wall Street actually was the second tallest building in downtown Manhattan, and it was actually before the World Trade Center was the tallest. And then when they built the World Trade Center, it became known as the second tallest, and now it's the tallest.
This was on 9/11?
The night of 9/11.
Oh, God.
The fires are still burning. Can't make it up.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. It was a beautiful day.
Sun beat down. 9:12 now. I was driving. I think we just posted, did we post my blog? It's up now at WGNradio.com, WGN Radio app, wherever blogs are. And it's called America's PTSD because I believe the country has PTSD post 9/11. So you can read that. Mary, don't you have a Dancing with the Stars blog coming soon?
I am going to start one. Dancing with the Stars begins tonight.
And who are you picking?
Who am I picking? Probably Lori Hernandez.
Let's hold her to that. You got a pick for Dancing with the Stars? Because didn't we all do some dopey pool in the newsroom?
We did do a pool, yeah. We all have. Well, you and Ro have the same person. Judy Pilek and I have the same person. So we should also keep track of who's ahead in that, too.
But tomorrow we'll do our football, our wing-dang-doodle situation. But can I ask why we would have more players than there were dancers?
I don't know.
Why Roe and I have the same person?
I don't know. Ryan Burrow put it together. I think there were more people who wanted to participate than there were dancers. So
we have Roe and I have Ed Asner, right? Is that who we have?
No, who do you have?
You have Vanilla Ice, don't you?
Oh, well, that should last long.
Oh, there you go.
Well, at least you don't have Governor Perry.
Who got Governor Perry?
I don't know who got him, but
he was on the show the other day. He was actually pretty entertaining.
Yeah. He was good, and I'm glad you didn't tell him his chances of winning. He's the worst chance of winning. It's like 33-1.
I'm glad you didn't ask.
His odds were 33-1.
I said there's three things about you winning. There's this one, that one, and I couldn't remember the third. That's what I said to him.
When he said he's had no
then
dance.
I said, oops.
Yeah, when he said he never dances and he's had no experience, I'm like, okay.
You know, what's interesting about Dancing with the Stars, though, is you would think the athletes would be good, and some are, most are, but then you get like Martina Navratilova, God bless her. Couldn't put one foot in front of the other.
Well, they should have put a racket in her hand and threw balls at her.
And same with like Diana Nyad, who's a wonderful. Obviously,
throw her in the water.
Are never good.
But she just doesn't have the.
And Geraldo should have tapped. Steps. He's been tap dancing for years. Hello!
Now, Geraldo, I thought would
By the way, that was
better.
A tribute. That was a tribute to our friend Paul Green.
Oh, yeah.
The football players are always really good, though. And you know what's so funny when you bring up Paul? He loved Dancing with the Stars.
That's, Professor Paul did?
Yes. That's what we talked about. Whenever he came in, that's the first thing he would talk to me about was Dancing with the Stars. He watched it all the time.
More words on Professor Paul here in a few minutes. Also, Pat McGann and Rocky LaPorte will join John DeCoste and then me on the phone here in a little bit. We have our show at Governor's State coming up in a couple of weeks on Saturday night, the 24th. On the phone now is Stephen Sambu, 2016 Shamrock Shuffle winner and the world's fastest 8K roadrunner, Bank of Chicago Marathon coming up, and I believe... Stephen, is this going to be your Chicago Marathon debut?
Yes, it's going to be my first one, so I'm excited. I'm ready for it.
Is this your first marathon?
Yeah, this is my first marathon. So it's my debut in Chicago. I like to do it here because it's flat course. So that's why I came to Chicago. And also I like Chicago because of spectators, very nice people, very nice organization. So
sure.
That's why I came here.
Would you like me to stand by in the case you need a ride? I could pick you up?
Yes.
All right. So what's the longest distance you've run competitively?
Yeah. The fastest I've done is half marathon, 21 kilometers.
So that's 13 miles and change.
Yeah, 13.1.
Yeah, 13.1. Yeah.
How did that feel?
Well, it feels good. You know, I've done that one in 1 hour. So I think in full marathon, maybe I can do it a little bit over 2 hours.
It takes me that long to drive to work sometimes.
Yeah, 13 miles. I've done it in an hour. You know what I'd do in an hour? I'd regret my decision that I started the half marathon.
Stephen, how different is it to train, though, for, okay, say an 8K, then a 10K, then a half marathon, and then a 26-mile marathon?
Yeah, it's a little bit, you know, different. You know, the only thing I have to change, I have to increase the mileage, because now I'm doing around 110 or sometimes 120 per week. So I have to increase the mileage, and that's it. You know?
And that's not weather permitting. That's every day, right? Or do you take a day off?
Every day. Yeah, no. Every day. Because, you know, like, I have to do it every day for me to reach 110 miles. Sometimes I do twice. Like, a long run in the morning, and then in the evening, I do, like, a little bit, maybe, like, 8 miles or 5 miles.
So he's running, kids, let me do the math for you. He's running 15 or 16 miles a day.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. You should, seriously, Stephen, get a car. Dave, I'm going to say hi to the great Stephen Sambu.
Hey, Stephen, welcome back. And what was your impression of Chicago when you ran the Shamrock Shuffle?
You know, I like the way people like were cheering for me on the road. The road is like packed all from the start of the end. And also, it's flat. It's nice. You know, what flat course is always the best when you are running.
Mm-hmm. Now in Kenya, is there any flat earth, or is it just one up one mountain, down another?
No, like mountains everywhere. It's so tough. You can't even race there. Like, training is good, but not racing. Racing is going to be tough.
Stephen, what are the best race conditions? I mean, because I know they say for the marathon, you don't want it too hot. It has to be cooler temperatures. What's the best, the ideal temperatures to run in?
Yeah, so I think the best would be maybe something like 60s to maybe low 70s, that's going to be really good. But not too cold, not too warm. So I think 60s, high 60s and low 70s will be really nice.
How about 68 degrees with no wind?
That's going to be perfect. That's going to be like really good.
maybe I'll do it on a Segway. You know what a Segway is, Stephen?
Yeah, I know. I think that you stand on it. Yeah,
yeah, I'll stand on it, and I'll just go next to you and go, "You're doing great, Stephen."
That will be good, because you will be giving me company running. So it's
going to
be nice.
And during the Great Chicago Marathon, you will have people running in Statue of Liberty outfits, superhero costumes, people dressed in all sorts of stuff, and they run the entire race in those get-ups. I mean, those people are crazy.
Yeah, sometimes when I see that, it's like so tough, because sometimes you can use that one, and it is so warm, so you'll be so sweaty because of those clothes. You put on all, it's tough, but sometimes it's fun to do something like that.
Well, we're very excited about your participation in what year is this? Do we even know? Is this the 114th?
First one was 1977.
Let me do the math. 39.
Wow.
Ah, there you go.
The 39th Bank of America Chicago Marathon, the marathon debut of the great Stephen Sambu. And Stephen, I'm very excited that you're going to be doing this. I think it's great for the race. And again, this is your first marathon, and your goal is what time?
So my goal is to run, you know, I don't want to pressure myself a lot, but I just want to run under 210, just under. I know if I run 206, it'll be good, but
206. First marathon, 206.
You know, yeah, if I got, that would be good. But under 210 would be good.
You guys mean 2 hours and 6 minutes?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or 2 days? Okay, because I'm just trying to put
Steve,
this in perspective.
Steve, you cannot ride a Segway that quickly. Just want to point that out.
It is taking
me. Running past
I'm
you.
Not exaggerating. You know, I've got my summer house in Naperville. It's taken me 2 hours to get home. Right? In a car.
Right.
In a car.
See, if you ran.
Yeah, if you ran, you could make it.
Steven could give me a piggyback ride. It might be faster.
Yeah, like.
But not great for your back.
No.
No.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
What is the world record time for the marathon? Is it 2:03?
2:57. So it's quick.
2:57. Wow.
Well, maybe don't stop, you know, for one of your stops, and you're in at 2:02, 2:01. You know, there is talk that in our lifetime, somebody will break the 2-hour mm-hmm. number.
Yep.
You know, I think so. I think somebody will do it. Somebody will do 2:01, maybe later soon. I don't know when, but, you know, I think someday somebody will do it.
Well, this is something else that you're taking this on. And as you said, the half marathon was a breeze at an hour.
Yeah.
I've stood in line at IKEA for an hour and gotten tired. You ran 13 miles in an hour. Good Lord.
Yes.
Steven, you're an amazing guy. Can we follow you online anywhere?
Yeah. So,
How about, I've got it right here. How about at SK Sambu? On Twitter.
Oh, that's Twitter. That would be good. Or Facebook, Steven Sambu. That would be good.
Yeah, both of those are good. All right, Steven, you're always welcome here, and you're my new favorite runner.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot.
Well, the best. Hold on. Give him a Lou Malnati's pizza. Let's see if we can fatten him up for the race.
Don't do that.
He'll eat it after.
Don't you think about this. He could run two marathons when you start the show until you finish the show.
That's two marathons. That's two marathons. Yeah.
And he's probably smiling doing it.
Yeah.
Not breaking a sweat.
No. But I sit for 4 hours and say smart-ass things. So how hard is my job?
You know what? Everybody should go. If you can't run, I mean, I could never run a marathon. But I like to go and watch all the runners go through the neighborhoods. It's October 9th this year.
Yeah, it is cool.
It is so cool to watch
Very inspirational to see people. Yeah, and you'll find yourself at some point while you're watching going, I have got to do this. And then you'll come to your senses.
And then you get home.
Yeah.
You walk the block home and go, I don't know.
Yeah. Just start training for one, and you'll say, oh, boy.
Here's what we'll do.
I got myself in?
You know what we could do? We could get Steven Sambu Sweet Alley's Bakery sampler pack with all sorts of baked goods and a pizza.
Oh, he needs donuts.
For after the race.
I don't know. He burns a lot of calories.
Yeah, he would burn that off in a heartbeat.
9:23, the Steve Cochran Show continues. The Professor Paul Green, some further thoughts on Paul, who passed away this weekend unexpectedly. This is Steve Cochran. And this is show number 731 at 720 WGN. So, anyone know the time of the marathon? What, 7:30 in the morning? Is that usually the kickoff?
That's when it starts.
October 9th.
October 9th, Sunday.
For those of you who missed the sad news from the weekend, Professor Paul Green, who has been a part of the WGN family forever, at least in my recollection, and was a regular with Collins, was a regular with Spike, and has appeared, I think, on every show on the station at various times. Mm-hmm. He died Saturday unexpectedly. He had an aortic aneurysm, which I'm pretty sure it's the same thing that killed John Ritter. And as Dr. Most mentioned earlier, unless you are in a position to be at a hospital and pretty much on a surgical table when this happens, it's a very difficult thing to survive.
Right.
So our thoughts are certainly with his family, his wife and daughter. He lost his son.
Bobby.
Bobby a few years ago after bravely fighting cancer for, I don't know, seemed like forever. They tried everything.
Many years. Do you remember Bobby's last wish was he wanted to visit every state. And about a week before he passed away, Paul, he had one more state left. I think it was Nebraska. And Paul said as soon as they crossed into the border, he kind of raised his hand. I mean, he'd been fighting
forever.
Yeah. Kind of raised his hands up in the air and he said, I did it, Dad. And then about a week later.
Just breaks your heart.
Yeah.
And obviously took a tremendous toll on Paul and his family. But yet he continued to work and he continued to do all the things he did and built the City Club into this amazing must-see, must-experience political event that brings in the biggest speakers. I'm interested to see what the legacy is there because I certainly don't know. I wouldn't want to fill Paul Green's footsteps at the City Club to try to keep that going.
And Paul Green is the reason we play the City Club audio on our website as well. All of the, in case you miss the speeches.
Right, and all the speakers that have come through.
Yeah.
But a big part of everything related to city politics, a punster, a funny guy, and a good guy. And if your legacy is you're a connected guy and a good guy, it's hard to be as connected to politics as he was in this town and still be a good guy, and yet he managed to pull it off.
Yeah.
Here's 10 seconds of Paul.
Remember the movie The Treasure of the Sierra Madre when the guy said, I don't need no stinking badges? Well, the way they're spending money, we don't need no stinking budget.
See, he would go on, he'd come up with a line, he'd giggle to himself, he'd write it down, he'd come in and he'd pretend he just made it up.
My favorite was budget after budget after budget, or lack thereof. He kept quoting Britney Spears, oops, they did it again.
Yes, he loved it. And as Mary told you before, he was a big Dancing with the Stars fan. He's going to miss the premiere and miss the election. There's something very wrong with that. So we will think of all the good times with Paul, and we'll miss him. And we know you guys that have been listening to this station forever will as well. But Paul Green gone at 73. And I don't know about you, Dave Innitt. 73 ain't as old as he used to be.
No, it seems younger all the time.
Yeah, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. 9:30, big story next, 720 WGN.
Longest time, whoa, for the longest.
The next Steve Cochran stand-up show will be at Governor State University. So what should you do? Go online or you can call too. This way you all avoid the longest lines.
How about that? How about that? Iceman Productions, proud to bring you one on this show. Listen, John DeCoste joins me. John, through the years, we've done a lot of shows. Yeah. And we've had a lot of fun, but I'm really looking forward to this one.
Oh, same here. I mean, this is what we call a loaded show. Either one of the, both of these guys, you would pay to see separately.
Well, I wouldn't pay. I'd ask for free tickets. But
you would get free tickets, yeah.
But to have Rocky the Poor, Pat McGann, John DeCoste all on the same stage with me, their valet, it's going to be great. So how about a plug up front? Where and when?
It is September 24th, 7 o'clock at Governor State University. You can go online to get tickets at centertickets.net or call the box office directly at 708-235-2222.
How about a guy that bleeds White Sox black and white? As a matter of fact, if you cut, Dave, if you cut Pat McGann, he bleeds black and white.
I know that.
Yeah. Pat McGann joins us. Hi, buddy.
Hey, what's up? Nice to be with you guys, and I feel like I've been bleeding all summer.
Yes, you have. You need a White Sox tourniquet.
Right.
Let's get another blatant plug out here. Pat McGann has a stand-up album out that was recorded at the Rosemont Zanies, which is Fall Down Funny. Thank God I was sitting and driving when I was listening to it.
Is that the one with the Oreo cookies?
Grilling
the Oreos?
I don't remember. Yeah, you know, he does mention that.
Oh, that's the best.
But I'm telling you, it is really, really funny, and it's not easy to be that funny, and you can go out and get it, and how do we do that?
It's on iTunes. You can get it, download it there. It's called Sounds Good is the name of the album. So, yeah,
very
it's
nice.
Been a lot of fun. Thank you for plugging that.
Yeah, and Jake, can I jump, can I throw Rocky on here too without hanging up on somebody? All right, let me do this. I love our phone system. I don't know if you guys know that about me. Nope, just hung up on Pat. So, Pat, please call back. Rocky LaPorte joins us. Good morning, buddy.
Hey, buddy, how are you?
I'm sorry, Rock. Did we get you to bad time?
No, that's good. I'm good.
Well,
I'm a White Sox fan, too. I'm with Pat that you hung up on. Did you hang up on him?
Yeah, absolutely hung up on him. Yeah, he's calling back.
Can't have none of that.
Are you in L.A.?
No, I'm actually in Chicago right now.
Okay, you know we're in the same time zone, right?
Yeah, but it's, you know, maybe I'm in L.A. time. Maybe that's what it is.
You just sound kind of tired. Now, I understand. I understand you got a Tonight Show hit coming up?
The day before we're doing your thing. I'm going to be on the Tonight Show Friday the 23rd, and I'll be with you on the 24th.
How great is that? He's using Fallon to warm up for me. How nice is that?
Yes, sir. You know what? I actually want to ask you about, I don't know, like 18 years ago, I was doing a gig in Riverside, California.
Okay.
And Jimmy opened for me. And it was in like this kind of, it was like a rough kind of bar, you know, and I'm like, oh, they're going to kill this poor kid. He has a little guitar. He's up there singing cute songs, but he pulled it off. And I want to ask him if he remembers that, you know.
That's a great story. He is, here's my thing about Tonight Show, and I told Jimmy Fallon this off the air. If he did only musical impressions, I'd watch every minute of every show. He is brilliant when he does musical impressions. Now, was that most of his stand-up act? Because I never saw him do stand-up, you know, as a regular.
Yeah, he did a lot of that stuff, and it went over great, you know what I mean? But at the time, he was such like a young kid, and I go, oh, they're gonna kill this guy in here, you know? It was kind of like a rough place, but he pulled it off, and he was always lovable, you know?
Yeah, it turns out that it worked out okay for him. John and I, and John, you'll back me up on this, and so will Pat McGinn. And let me pop Pat back on here because I think we figured out the trigonometry of our phone system. Pat, you'll back me up on this as well. The list of comics that comedians will stand in the back of the room to watch because they love to see him perform is a pretty short list. Am I right, fellas?
Oh, no, definitely, yes, sir.
And everybody will watch Rocky. Everybody will stand in the back of the room and watch Rocky. Rock, I don't know a bigger compliment to you than that.
Well, that's because they can't hear back there.
No. I don't know what it is. Pat, what is it about Rocky that makes Rocky a guy you got to see?
Rocky is just like, he's so unique. He's his own guy, you know, his own voice. Like, he is, and he's just pure comedian, you know? If you were to, like, try and define a stand-up, I think Rocky would be at the top of your list about, here's a guy who is just pure stand-up, and he's smart, he's clean, and it's just enjoyable.
I'll tell you how serious I am about that.
I want to open for Rocky on Friday night, too. Can I do, like, 2 minutes for you on Fallon and then bring you up?
I don't think it works that way, Pat, but we'll see if we can make a call.
Thank you, Pat. I'm getting you White Sox playoff tickets, my friend.
John, just to back up what I just said about Rock, do you remember the time I was on fire and you didn't help put me out because Rocky was going up?
Yeah, I really couldn't be bothered with that. I was going to miss something, and I couldn't do it. Yeah, he's phenomenal. But you know what's funny? And I've said this before. This was comedy is very much like jazz. It's like a rhythm. And, I mean, look, we laughed the minute Rocky picked up the phone.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You know, and it's actually both of them, because Pat has his own rhythm as well. And you just sit there and you get into that rhythm and you just walk away. You start sounding like them afterwards.
You know, Steve, you shouldn't sell yourself short. When you walk in the room, we all laugh, too.
Yeah, you guys miss that, but Andrea just pointed out, when I walk in the room, she laughs.
We all laugh, too.
Yeah, it's interesting. Me and Pat are both Catholic. We use the rhythm method.
Already.
Well, and here's the other thing, Rock, and you and John can back me up on this. For someone that has done stand-up for as short a period of time as Pat McGinn, I don't know anybody better. Pat, you're
second month. The kid's unbelievable.
Pat's been doing stand-up for, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years maybe. And he's tremendous. He's got a couple of Letterman hits. He's involved in a hit and run. I mean, he is... So anyway, I'm excited about this show. I don't know if you can tell.
I'm excited, too. It's a great. Everybody on the show is great. Everybody. This is going to be a good show from the beginning to the end.
What's the chances, John, that Rocky doesn't come back from New York?
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of. Yeah.
We'll get a call Saturday afternoon from LaGuardia. I can't find my plane.
And whose time zone will he be on?
That's a dire concern. All right, boys. So you guys are going to come in next week, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, I'm in Orlando right now, and I'm trying to. I feel real bad. I'm doing the thing at Disney World tomorrow, and having three little kids, I feel like I'm cheating on my kids this week.
You're in Orlando without your kids?
Yeah.
What a creep.
2 days. I feel like I'm going to come home, and they're going to smell like a mouse on me.
Party at Small World. Party at Small World.
Pat, don't worry about it. I'm taking them to Santa's Village today.
Oh, that's sweet. That's sweet. Rock, travel safe. Pat, travel safe. John, thanks again. And what's the plug for the show?
The plug is at Governor State University, September 24th, 7 o'clock. You can go online for tickets at centertickets.net.
or call the box office directly at 708-235-2222.
Thanks, boys. Hold on, and we'll be back with Bill and Wendy shortly on 720 WGN. We've got another Hometown Voices Tour show coming up. Andrea, where and when?
I will miss you guys. You are all going to be Thursday, September 22nd in Schaumburg.
Yeah.
Next stop on the WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate. I got this straight.
You don't even have to. No, it's not all straight. You don't have to be straight to be there. Whatever your lifestyle is.
Absolutely.
You're welcome.
We want all of you to be out there. It's a live broadcast at the Trickster Art Gallery. This is a really cool place. Next Thursday in Schaumburg, it's Illinois' only Native American-owned and operated arts museum. How cool is that? You'll get treats from Lumel Nadi's Pizza. You're going to get a chance to win tickets to the sold-out 2016 Chicago Blackhawks Training Camp Festival and more surprises. The WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate, Chicago's own good hands. All you have to do is visit the events page at WGNradio.com for details. You guys are going to have a good time.
Yes, we are. Dave, where will you be today? Are you going out to Northwestern to make sure that they're going to be okay?
Yeah, I am going up to Evanston to hear what Coach Fitz has to say about Saturday.
Go Cats.
And tomorrow, Mary Vandeveld will give us her first review of the new season of Dancing with the Stars. If you can't watch it, don't even DVR it. Mary will have it for you.
Does it start tonight?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I wonder, I think it might be on for two nights.
That's very exciting.
Monday and Tuesday.
Ooh, pinch me.
It used to be Monday, Tuesday every week.
Well,
and
maybe
now
it's just tonight.
Yeah, maybe it's just this week.
But I know they don't oust anyone the first week.
No Ousting.
No.
But we'll have that covered for you tomorrow. And also Senator Durbin tomorrow as well.
Aren't you excited a little bit about the pool?
Not so much.
Okay.
If you're looking to purchase a home, here's some great news. David Hochberg of Pearl Mortgage is hosting a free home buying seminar this Thursday at JC Restoration in Rolling Meadows starting at 7. You should attend if any of the following apply to you. You're thinking of purchasing a home within the next 12 months. You're a veteran. You'd like to learn about the benefits of VA loans. You'd like to purchase after a bankruptcy or foreclosure. You'd like credit enhancement tips to secure the lowest interest rate. You'd like to learn about a low down payment financing option or two, a down payment assisting program that might be right for you, and you'd also like to meet the top realtors in your area. Register for the free seminar this Thursday night. You simply need to go to WGNDavid.com and get all the details and tell them you're in. Seating's limited, so register now. WGNDavid.com. Pearl Mortgages and Equal Housing Lender. Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee. 4358 RMLA and MLS number 19186. Pearl Mortgage, an employer of Ross Cochran and the home of David Hochberg. What? Hochberg. David Hochberg at WGNDavid.com. Bill and Wendy are next.